Welcome, everyone, to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at the Score. We've made it out the other side of free agency here. I know there's still a few names left on the market, but most of the big names have signed now. And if you're curious of my thoughts on any of those players, you can go back, you can listen to last week's show, you can read all my recap articles on the Score. There's been a few deals that have been handed out since then, but I think we'll touch on all of those guys during today's show, because what I want to do today is I want to break down the unexpected risers and fallers of free agency. And I'm not talking about the free agents themselves, right? This is more about the players who are seeing their fantasy stock go up or go down based on the signings that are happening around them, whether it's guys being added to their teams, whether it's guys leaving their current club. So let's start with the risers. Let's dive right in. The first one, it's hard to imagine him not taking his game to the next level in 2021. It's AJ Brown. What happens when you take a guy who averaged the fifth most fantasy points among receivers in 2020, but he only averaged the 23rd most targets per game at his position? Now you take away Corey Davis, you take away Jonnu Smith, you have 224 vacated targets in total in that Titans offense, and your only really big addition is Josh Reynolds at receiver. I like Reynolds. I think he's a sneaky sleeper this year. He could step into that Corey Davis role, could have some good games, but he's more of a red zone threat. We haven't really seen him put up consistent big numbers. And I also like Anthony Firkser. So he's a dark horse at tight end for sure. They're bringing him back. I talked about him on last week's show. But these guys, they just aren't on the same plane as Brown. So Brown's volume is going to get a massive boost here. We know he has the talent to deliver. I have him as the wide receiver 4 in 2021, and I wish I could move him higher. The guy is just a fantastic player, and the opportunity's coming for him this year. I'll be trying to draft him everywhere I can in 2021. Another receiver who's getting a bump after free agency, Terry McLaurin. This one's simple. Ryan Fitzpatrick showing up. We talked about the impact that Fitzpatrick can have on Washington last week. He's more aggressive. He loves to lock on to his top receivers, not afraid to throw those contested catch balls. All of it should be good for McLaurin. He's been producing over the last couple of years, despite average or even subpar quarterback play in Washington, let's face it. And really, over those 2 years, McLaurin's posted 145 catches, over 2,000 receiving yards, and 11 touchdowns, all while catching passes from Dwayne Haskins and Case Keenum and Alex Smith. And I'm not trying to say that Fitzpatrick is Aaron Rodgers here, but he can help McLaurin improve his numbers, push for high-end wide receiver 2, maybe even wide receiver 1 production in an offense that everybody should be excited about for fantasy and on a team that really is going to be dangerous this season. That Washington defense is stacked. Speaking of stacked teams, let's do one more receiver on the risers list, Mecole Hardman. Now, I'm expecting the Chiefs are going to draft a wideout in the first 3 rounds, somebody who can contribute in year 1, so Hardman might continue to be that mirage that we're chasing. He's always in the distance, never quite materializes into the fantasy star that we think he can be. But the Chiefs didn't add anybody in free agency. They flirted with Juju Smith-Schuster. He decided to stick in Pittsburgh. In fact, I mean, Casey, it looks like they're going to lose Sammy Watkins. He's visiting other teams right now. I know they did re-sign DeMarcus Robinson on a 1-year deal, but he's never stepped up into anything bigger than, you know, one game kind of fill-in type guy. He's really not been much more than that for fantasy or in real life. And right now, Hardman, you have to pencil him in as the number 2 wideout. Now, whether you want to consider that the number 2 or number 3, depending how you look at Travis Kelce, it's Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and then everybody else. But the number 2 receiver in a Patrick Mahomes-led offense, that alone makes him very intriguing for fantasy and gives him that wide receiver 3 upside if everything falls his way. So Hardman comes away as a winner for the time being anyway. We'll see if he can avoid major competition joining him in the form of an early draft pick in the first couple of rounds in April. Chase Edmonds, he's kind of in the same boat for the Cardinals. I know he's a running back, but he's also kind of looking to dodge these bullets this offseason, right? And the first one was free agency. I suppose it's still possible that one of the remaining guys like James Conner could sign in Arizona, but at the moment, Edmonds' bigger obstacle is the draft, and whether the Cards are going to select somebody, kind of like I talked about with Hardman, whether they're going to spend an early round pick on a player at his position, in my mind, it's really only one of those big 3 that I would be worried about. So they would have to spend a round 1 or round 2 pick to get Travis Etienne or Najee Harris or Javonte Williams. If they don't pick anybody from that trio, I think Edmonds is at least going to have a shot to hold on to this job. It'll be a competition with anyone else or him being definitely in the lead going into training camp. And remember, Edmonds only had two games this year where he saw over 60% of the snaps. And in those two games total, he put up 233 yards from scrimmage, 40 touches, caught all 10 of the targets thrown his way. So in this offense, we know the upside can be there. Kenyon Drake was a top five back in the second half of 2019 after they got him in the trade. If Edmonds gets his shot, he could be an RB2 in fantasy. But if they add one of those big name prospects, Edmonds is going to end up being still valuable, still a high-end backup. But at the moment, he's a riser. If we see something different happen in the draft, he could end up being a faller after all this is said and done. So I guess we're putting a little asterisk next to him on this list. There's a bunch of quarterbacks that we can highlight here as risers as well. I mean, a guy that it doesn't seem like things could get much better for him, but Tom Brady. And most Super Bowl teams, they lose players. It makes it tough to repeat. Not Tampa. Godwin, Gronk, they're both back. Leonard Fournette just announced that he's re-signing with Tampa right before we came on to record this. Shaq Barrett, Levante David, they're returning on defense. The crew is together again. They're going for another run, and they have a solid chance at it. The offense could be better this year. Everybody should be more comfortable in that system, working together, and we might see them get Antonio Brown back still. He could still end up in the fold. Who knows what will happen with the rest of free agency here. And even if Brown doesn't resign, they have Scotty Miller. They have Tyler Johnson. They drafted those receivers to step into that role if they didn't have somebody or if Chris Godwin left. Now that Godwin's sticking around, they still have those guys on the roster. They're more than capable of stepping up and being a number three receiver in that offense. So even though it's just bringing back players, it's not adding players, I still consider Tom Brady a riser here. I thought they would lose someone. I thought a little bit of that core would go away. It's not at this point. And if you're curious on my reaction to the Fournette news, like I said, it came out right before we started here. I'm not overly interested in him this year. I really haven't been the last couple of years. He only went off when Ronald Jones got banged up down the stretch. And I see this being a frustrating committee again, like it was for most of last year. It's good for the Bucs. It's good for them in real life. I just don't think it's going to be great news for fantasy managers, but definitely good news for Brady and that offense as a whole. Tua Tagovailoa, another riser on my list. I feel like I've talked about this a few times recently, but the idea that people are down on Tua after last year, it just seems so premature to me. And with the addition of Fuller, the likely addition of a top running back prospect, all the reports are saying that the odds of Myles Gaskin being the lead running back the start of this year, it's very, very slim. They're going to bring somebody else in. Maybe they'll get more offensive line help in the draft. That's probably where they're going to find that running back, probably one of the three guys I mentioned earlier. Tua's going to have every chance to succeed. He's going to have all those weapons around him. This is a front office, a coaching staff. They're just doing things right. It's very reminiscent of the Bills turnaround the last couple years under Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean. You got to love what Chris Greer and Brian Flores are doing in Miami right now. Another quarterback that's a riser, and it's kind of surprising because if we're going to praise those guys, we kind of got to give Dave Gettleman a little bit of praise here. I know it's shocking, but he's doing everything he can to make that Daniel Jones pick work. I was intrigued by Jones last year. The offense went nowhere after Saquon Barkley got hurt, but now they're going to have Barkley back, and now you add Kenny Golladay to the mix. And we had the scores, David P. Woods, Dan Wilkins, they were on before free agency, they were predicting landing spots, and they mentioned the Giants for Golladay, and it's really perfect, right? He allows Sterling Shepard to slide into the slot, Darius Slayton's that field stretcher on the other side, Golladay gives him the big body, the red zone threat, plus you have Evan Ingram at tight end, just a ton of weapons. I think this is going to be a problem fantasy-wise just for those pass catchers. I think it's going to be bad because there's going to be a lot of target competition. It's going to be pretty heavy there. But the winner overall is Jones. It's similar to Tua. He's going to have every chance to succeed. If he falters at this point, if he has all these weapons around him and he falters, then you know it's never going to happen for him. But with all those guys, with his rushing ability, Jones had over 400 rushing yards last year. That gives him a very interesting ceiling for fantasy if it all comes together. I just hope that offensive line doesn't cause the whole house of cards to crumble, right? We'll see what they can do between now and week one, maybe in the draft, maybe some, you know, veteran free agent signings just to kind of fortify up front after losing Kevin Zeitler. Some other risers we can toss in quick here. Justin Herbert, you want to talk about offensive line and what a difference it can make? Well, the Chargers went out. They got some upgrades. Corey Linsley, Matt Failer, and veteran pass-catching tight end Jared Cook, that could help offset the loss of Hunter Henry in that offense. I don't know how much Cook has left in the tank, but it should be something. It's better than going into the season with an unproven guy like Donald Parham, who I do like as a sleeper, but a guy that really you're not sure if you're getting anything from. At least Cook gives you a veteran presence there as well. Overall, this should be a huge boon for Herbert. He's safely inside my top seven quarterbacks for 2021. T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, I can't say I was that worried about them early in the offseason, but then there was talk about the Bengals potentially adding Galladay, that they were interested. That didn't emerge. So that leaves Higgins, Boyd. They're going to be Burrow's top two options, and Higgins deserves to be viewed as a wide receiver two, maybe even with wide receiver one upside. That's how much I like him this year. Boyd is a wide receiver three with wide receiver two upside. Just as long as Burrow can stay healthy, those guys are going to ball this season. Mo Alie-Cox, Trey Burton's gone. Mac just needs to get that lead job at tight end for Indy, right? He has the talent. He's got the athleticism. It's just kind of been another one of those situations, almost like Mecole Hardman, where it seems like he should get more of an opportunity, and then it doesn't happen. He goes off for a game or two, and then all of a sudden takes a back seat again. We know this offense favors tight ends. We know Wentz is very familiar with going to his tight ends, going back to Philly, Ertz being one of his top guys there for years, also Dallas Goedert, of course. So he's a sleeper. Keep him in mind this season. Alie-Cox could be a very intriguing one of those late round guys, or even a guy in the waiver wire that you grab in the first couple weeks of the season and ends up being your starting tight end the rest of the way. All right, that's 10 or so risers. Let's hit on some of the fallers after free agency. And we have to begin with Josh Jacobs. I won't spend too much time on it. We talked about it last week, but Kenyon Drake, him signing with the Raiders for the money that they spent, $11 million guaranteed, $14.5 million over 2 years. One of the most baffling moves in all of free agency. I do think the offensive line changes are being a little overblown there, since the Raiders' run blocking, it wasn't the best last year, at least in terms of what they were paying for it. So I'm willing to give them a shot on the line before we overreact to the big names leaving town, though. Yeah, Rodney Hudson, that one hurt. I mean, you never want to lose your stud center, but apparently they really like 23-year-old Andre James. They just inked him to a 3-year deal. They brought back Richie Incognito, Denzel Good. So the line isn't going to be a complete disaster, at least not what people are making it out to be. I think people love to pile on John Gruden and the Raiders, and yeah, they've made a ton of questionable decisions, but the bigger issue here for Jacobs and for fantasy is Drake showing up, turning this into a committee. The Raiders just don't seem interested in giving Jacobs that workhorse role. And despite the fact we saw his receiving game role rise, had 20 catches for 166 yards as a rookie, 27 targets that year. That bumps up this year, 45 targets, catches 33 of them for 238 yards. It's just hard to see that increasing much, if at all, with Drake now signing the deal that he did too, because it's not just that he came in, it's the amount of money that they committed to him at a position where, as we're seeing with some of the other signings, you really don't need to spend much to get these running backs. So Jacobs falls into the low-end RB2 ranks, Drake in that RB3 flex range. The whole thing just very disappointing. I mean, I'm sure you can tell by my voice. I have a lot of Jacobs shares in Dynasty, and I hate to see this happen to him. To a lesser degree, I'm also bumping down David Montgomery a little bit, and it's partially because the team brought in Damian Williams, but I'm also factoring in the return of a healthy Tariq Cohen. And that's big because Montgomery didn't break out last year until Cohen was sidelined, and a couple things came together there. It was that the receiving role became much bigger with Cohen not there, so all of a sudden these targets were being forced on Montgomery. And also, it took the schedule to become ridiculously easy down the stretch. So I was already worried about Montgomery. Now you add in a capable veteran like Damian Williams who could take maybe a little more of that passing role. It just doesn't help his cause. So it's not like Montgomery's going to fall on his face. He's still a low-end RB2, kind of like Jacobs, but anyone expecting more, anyone who was so excited about that run down the stretch that he had, I would think twice, because I think the receiving work's likely to be limited now with those two guys in the mix, and the schedule, it may never be as friendly as it was in the second half of 2020 for him. And I don't want to pile on the Bears, but I kind of got to do it here. Allen Robinson and Darnell Mooney also on the fallers list. This one's simple. We enter the offseason with high hopes. Either Robinson forces a trade, goes to a team with a better quarterback, or the Bears bring in a better quarterback, maybe make a trade happen for a guy like Russell Wilson. In the end, the result is Andy Dalton, QB1, just like the Bears Twitter account put out the other day. So embarrassing. But we're staring down another season here with average or subpar quarterback play. And that means Robinson, Mooney, they're not really going to rise the ranks, right? They're dropping a few spots, if anything. Robinson's still a high-end wide receiver too. And Mooney, he has the upside, but we need to see if Dalton can do anything more than just a slightly better Nick Foles impression. And I don't have much hope of that passing attack improving at all with Dalton at the helm in 2021. We can stick with the NFC North here. We'll slide over to the Lions for our next faller, DeAndre Swift. And I want to be clear, Jamal Williams isn't going to destroy Swift's value. I had a lot of people asking me about having Swift so low in my rankings. I bumped him down a little further down into that RB2 range. People need to stop talking in absolutes, whether it's about fantasy football, whether it's about sports in general, whether it's about life. I mean, you got to bring nuance to the conversation. And we saw Williams siphon a lot of touches from Aaron Jones. That didn't make Jones a player that you weren't going to touch at all. But Jones is also playing in a Packers offense that had a lot of scoring opportunities, very prolific offense. Now we're looking at the Lions where this isn't going to be a 35-year-old Adrian Peterson backing up Swift. It's not going to be a guy that only caught 12 passes last year, right? That's what Peterson did. Williams, 39 receptions in 2019, 31 last year. He also posted 460 rushing yards, 505 rushing yards over the last two seasons. So he is a capable back, an all-around back. The Lions offense, they're not going to be as productive as the Packers offense. I mean, certainly not as many scoring opportunities. So with Jared Goff under center, I was already a little worried about Swift. He kind of already started moving down the rankings at that point. Now he's got a proven vet behind him who can steal work, not just on the ground, but the passing game as well. And I love Swift. Everyone knows that. I talked about him last year. He was my top-rated running back in that class coming out. But this is going to hold him in that RB2 range for now. Talent-wise, he might have been an RB1. If they brought everyone back, if they improved on what they did last year, added pieces, maybe he could have bumped up into that RB1 range. But with the changes in this offense over the last couple months, it's looking really unlikely for him. We got to mention A.J. Dillon among the fallers. This one's obvious. I won't spend much time on it. We touched on it last week. Aaron Jones returning. That's going to block Dillon for at least a couple of years, barring Jones getting injured in the next couple seasons here. So Dillon goes back into the garage, going to be a top-notch backup with league-winning upside if he can get an opportunity to get on the field in a full-time role, but unlikely to happen with Aaron Jones back there. Now, David Johnson. Now, he's been injured a bit in his career, so people might not realize it, but he turns 30 in December, and that alone is a concern. Then you add in the uncertainty of the Deshaun Watson situation. It's not even just a trade at this point. It's whether he could be forced to miss time due to a mounting legal situation. Now free agency brings Philip Lindsay and Mark Ingram into that Houston backfield. Everywhere Lindsay's gone, he's overachieved. So you have to think he's going into this backfield with these veteran guys. He's probably going to do it again here. Ingram's the kind of player I could see this Texans organization just foolishly giving him touches each week because he's that strong veteran presence in the locker room that they're going to love. Either way, I tried to get out of all my David Johnson shares last year when he was putting up volume numbers, and I'm happy that I was able to do it everywhere. He is a risky RB3 at this point, not somebody I'm going to be targeting, and probably going to be staying away from that Texans offense, but we're going to have to see what happens with the Watson situation and whether he's going to be on the field or not this year. I feel like I could go on and on about the fallers. I mean, there's other guys that I jotted down here. Damian Harris, you have Cam Newton coming back, James White coming back, should fall into the same situation as last year where he could be that early down back, might lose a few touches to Sony Michel in that role, but he's going to struggle to put up a big touchdown total. Playing next to Newton, Newton had 12 rushing touchdowns last year. Even if that comes down a bit, is it ever going to be at the point where Harris has a shot at double-digit touchdowns or something to boost his value? I don't think that's going to happen. That leaves him in the RB3 mix. Devontae Parker, Preston Williams, with Fuller showing up. We already talked about it. It caps their upside, right? So especially Williams. He's had injuries the last 2 years that kind of prevented him from breaking out. He really had a shot there. Was a player I liked a lot, but now you have Fuller there. It complicates the whole situation, and I don't think that you're going to see Parker or Williams put up nearly as big numbers as we have seen in the past. Jamison Crowder, Corey Davis, another set of hands to feed. Denzel Mims going into his sophomore season, a lot of promise there. Even Keelan Cole signing in free agency, he's not a scrub. He is somebody who can come in and potentially be their third receiver, and there's been a lot of talk about Crowder either being traded or released. As a volume-dependent slot guy who's going to lose volume now, I'm staying away. I was probably staying away before, but this seals the deal. Henry Ruggs, I'm still going to take my shots on him, but he does have to fall down the rankings with John Brown being there. Just a veteran that can do a lot of the same things, has that speed, could steal some work from him. Kind of like we saw Nelson Aguilar last year, right? Nelson Aguilar, capable veteran, he ends up getting more targets. Donald Parham, who we talked about, Henry leaves, Jared Cook signs. That makes a Parham breakout a little more unlikely. And then Van Jefferson, DeSean Jackson signing with the Rams. That's going to cut into his targets and his chance for a breakout, at least as long as DeSean Jackson can stay healthy, right? Because we know D-Jax, that doesn't tend to be very long, but it's another obstacle for Jefferson, who is already fourth or fifth in the pecking order in that passing attack. So makes it that much harder for him to pop up in fantasy. A lot of changes in free agency, as you can see. I mean, I could quickly just rattle off all these names here and the values changing and the landscape changing. And there's more to come here. We're only a month away from the draft, so I have lots more. But that's all for today's show. I'll be back next week. We've got a lot of great shows, a lot of great guests coming up over the next month as the draft approaches. So I'm really excited for that. Until then, though, big thanks for all the feedback on my rankings, on my Dynasty Trade Value Chart. I love discussing that with everyone. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening, and we will see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby. Said leave on time. Leave on time.